my way of spreading the joy is by making a film. Hopefully people can see it. Again, if someone gets inspired and play and their life is changed in any way, then I would have complete my mission.
Hi, I'm Crystal Brown, your host. Are you wondering why pickleball has taken off as the fastest growing sport in America? Well, filmmaker Machu Latori was too. She's the producer of the upcoming film, The Game Changer, where she tells the story of pickleball's amazing growth, what people love about it, and what's so special about it. Listen in as we hear some highlights of the film and how you can support it getting to the big screen. And of course, why so many people are addicted to playing. Now to the show.
Welcome to Simply Pickleball, the podcast where we discuss all things pickleball, the fastest growing sport in America and around the world. We're interviewing the founders, industry leaders, athletes, lovers of the sport that are driving the spectacular growth. If you love pickleball as much as we do, listen in.
Machu, thank you so much for joining today. I'm really excited to talk to you about pickleball, which is obviously something we connect on, and Spain too, which is something we also connect on. But before we get into pickleball and your documentary and your love of the sport, I'm just curious a little bit about your background. You were born in Spain originally, and I'm curious, were you an athlete growing up? Was sports a big part of your life? Something you were interested in growing up?
Yes. I was one of those very active girls, and this is going to reveal my age, but when I was a kid, women's sports were limited in Spain, were limited to tennis, and that's about it. So, you know, my parents could not afford to send me to, you know, tennis training or anything like that. So I just, you know, picked up whatever sports I could play on the streets. And I played a lot of soccer with boys. I love soccer. I probably would have been a soccer player if that had been an option for girls. But so I played a lot of that until I reached the age where boys just did not want to have the girls around. And so randomly, I met this gentleman who has started a basketball team in my hometown, a women basketball team. I was actually one of the pioneers of that. And so he said, "You look athletic. Have you ever played basketball?" And I was like, "No." So he said, "Come and join us." So I started playing basketball, and I ended up playing on the National League for a long time. So yeah, that was my sport growing up. And I still love soccer, but unfortunately I was never able to play it.
I feel like I don't meet anyone from Spain who does not love soccer, or really any Latin American country or England or really anywhere in the world, including the U.S. But exactly. But back to, we can talk about soccer in another episode. So you ended up coming to the United States, and you mentioned that it was really because of a love of filmmaking. Was that also something that you were interested in growing up, films? And I mean, there's some amazing Spanish films that I love, but clearly that piqued your interest enough to move to the United States.
Yes, definitely. I remember my dad taking me to the video store. This is when, again, not giving out how old I am, but it's all going to come together very soon. When there were actually two sections to pick from, Beta and VHS. You know, that's how far this
I remember.
Was. It. Yeah. And we will go to the video store and we will rent like 7 movies at a time. And that's what we would do as a family. That was our common, you know, family activity. And we would just watch one after another. So movies had always been a big part of my life.
Were they American films or Spanish films or both?
All of it. We watch all kinds of films. There's no discrimination. He would just go in and we'll pick all kinds of movies, from like silly comedies to Westerns to horror films, anything. I think I probably watch a lot of films I shouldn't have as a child.
But you know, that's interesting because, you know, again, documentaries are a type of film, but a very different type of genre, right? You're telling a story. And so how did you get interested in documentary in particular versus maybe some other part of film?
That's a great question. And actually, when you say all genres, we really watched everything except for documentaries. Oh. Because at the time, documentaries were not something that you rented at the video store.
That's true.
Were those things that you watch in, like, you know, the secondary channel that will watch this like boring, you know, history, you know, things. And right. So I didn't watch, documentary was not at all on my radar when I came here to the U.S. to study film. And I was actually working on a scripted story about the injustice of the immigration system when it came to gay couples being together. And as part of the research, I contacted this organization just to get some stories to inspire the script. And they said, hey, there's a group of people that actually meets every Friday and they share their stories. And I started going to that meeting and I thought, oh, wow, this is actually a real thing. I mean, I had heard about it, but there were so many different stories.
Documentary films is a real thing.
The story, the people being affected by these was like a real thing. It was bigger than I thought. I started talking to them and their stories were probably more interesting than what I could have done in a script. So, and then I learned that at the time, you know, a little bit more about documentaries and the social impact they can have. And so it was really intriguing, the idea of actually doing a documentary about a social justice topic that could lead to some change was very interesting. And then this is also at the time I had just started working with these two directors, documentary filmmakers in San Francisco, Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman, who collectively have like 3 Oscars and Emmys. And
wow,
they really introduced me to the world of documentaries. It all happened, you know, right around the same time. And I fell in love with that genre.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, the storytelling, again, we share a lot of interests. So I use podcasts as a way to tell stories, and it's very similar with documentary, although it's a big effort. So let's pause for a second on documentary films and tell me about your love of pickleball, assuming you do love pickleball. How did you sort of combine your love of sports and manifest it into pickleball?
Yes, I think I could say I'm a bit of an addict myself. I was introduced to pickleball about a year and a half, under 2 years ago, by a friend who, my friend Barb, who for the longest time we'll talk about pickleball relentlessly. It became at some point, I don't know when, but it became this whole topic of conversation whenever she would come to visit, and she would say, hey, you have to play. You need to try this out because, you know, I love sports. And I was like, yeah, no, she's a little older than me and, you know, was not retired, but, you know, had a lot more time than I did. And she would say, yeah, we go meet every day. Every day I go at like 1 or 2 p.m. You should come 1 or 2 p.m. I'm working at that time. I can't leave to play pickleball, whatever that is. And after months and months and months, I finally, you know, said, look, I'm going to go play it. I'll go try it with you. But you promised that you won't ask me again. If you ever ask me, I'm going to do it one time. And she had a little, you know, gleam in her smile.
Grin,
thank you. She knew exactly what, you know, she was doing. And so I went to the court and tried it with her and her partner. So it was the 3 of us and we got there. And she said, well, we'll find a 4th person. I'm like, you find a 4th person? Some random person we're going to pick on the street? And she's like, yeah, it kind of works like that. And so sure enough, I was like, oh my God, this thing is getting weirded, right?
Yeah.
And so we found this 4th person who was just leaving the court. And my friend asked if she would join us. And she's like, no, I've been playing for 2-3 hours. And I was like, 2-3 hours? What the heck? And she's like, okay, you know, fine, I'll stay. And she stayed and played with us. And I had a blast. I really did.
Right away, you were like,
yeah. It hooked me right in. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's really what I want to sort of dig into with you, and also ask you about. So, you know, you could have just played, and also continued doing documentaries about maybe larger social justice issues. It could be homelessness. It could be anything. You pick anything. There's a lot of them, right? And you're a mother and you have a full-time job and making documentary films. My mother makes documentary films, so I know they're time consuming and they can be expensive. So what made you think that anyone would be interested in pickleball from a documentary standpoint, right? It's not really a social justice issue, although maybe we'll get to maybe it is, but you know, what made you think someone would want to watch a movie about pickleball?
Yes, that's right. That's another good question. So I think a couple of things about that. I think one, I know I went to play having so much skepticism about it and so much ideas of what this thing was that were not. And the more I play, the more I experience pickleball, the community, the people, you know, hearing people's stories about it, the more I realize that, yeah, what you hear in the news, what you see on newspapers are right. usually stories that are meant to attract an audience, and they don't tend to be nice stories. They tend to be stories about controversy. You know, there's a whole business controversy of pickleball. There is a whole like noise controversy of pickleball, but there's so much more to it. And so that as a storyteller was very intriguing to me, this idea of unveiling a world through a documentary, unveiling a world that hadn't really been given a fair chance.
Right.
On the other side, documentary filmmaking has the power to, you know, to change lives. It's got the power to, you know, reach many. And so I was hearing some of the stories on the courts about ways in which pickleball had changed people's lives. And I thought, how wonderful would it be if we could take that, you know, misconception of pickleball and show what really pickleball is about. And if someone watches that film and says, hey, I am that person. I am that person who's been suffering, you know, isolation, anxiety, and all the things that we've, you know, a lot of us have suffered in the last, you know, couple of years.
Yep.
And I can do that, and I can find community, and I can have fun, and I can, you know, bring my inner child out.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that. And if we could do that, then I feel like, yeah, spending whatever amount of time in making this film, which, you know, is a lot of time, would be yes. totally worth it.
Oh, that's awesome. So some of those stories, and I think, you know, every episode that I have and every person I meet, it's, you know, everyone talks about the sense of community and connection. What do you think is different than maybe another sport? Because there are other pickup sports, right? You can do pickup basketball. You can play tennis at a public court, although it's not so much pickup. Golf, often they have public courses where people can go. If there's one, they pair you up. I mean, it's not the first time, right, that there's ever been an opportunity. You go to a yoga class, you don't have to know anybody, you put your mat down, right? So what do you think, you know, I'm sort of asking this question with my own opinion of this, but what do you think that you're finding about how everyone has the same perspective, that there's just so much community and connection and something very special and different about pickleball?
Yeah. And that sort of became the central question that we're trying to answer with the documentary, right? That's sort of the main throughput through the entire piece, which is, what is it about pickleball? You know, why is it making people so addictive and crazy and, you know, about it? And what I have found in the, you know, through the dozens of interviews I've done, not just on camera, but off camera with people over the last year and a half, and not just here in the US, but also internationally, is that pickleball has this many components that you could find in different sports, but not all together. So, mm-hmm. for instance, pickleball is something that you could do for very little money, right? You don't need to invest in a lot of equipment. So it's very accessible for people who, yes. you know, don't have the means, which, you know, might be a little bit more difficult if you're doing golf, because it requires you, like, you know, you know, the golf clubs are expensive and all that.
The right shoes and yeah.
Yeah. From economically, it's really easy, accessible. Mm-hmm. From a physical standpoint, anybody can play pickleball. Anyone from, you know, a little 6-year-old to a 90-year-old. I think the oldest player is now in her 90s. And that is very different, you know, difficult to find in a sport. You can find it in activities, you know, you can argue that. I'm sure there's some activities where, you know, a grandparent can play with a grandson, but not at a competitive level or even at a point where you're actually at equal part. So so I think that is probably one of the biggest ones. But the community aspect of it, you ask, like, what are other sports that you can go pick up? And even if you can pick up on basketball, even if you can go to the park and do a pickup game basketball, you have to have an athletic condition to do so. Yeah. If you go and try to join a group of people playing basketball, well, first of all, you need to already know how to play basketball, right? Because there's no one's going to allow you to play if you can't even bounce the ball. But two, you have to have a physical condition to it. And same thing with tennis. You might not have to have as much of a physical condition as to play basketball, but you need to know the technique. But there aren't any, and I would say any, right now I can say any, unless someone can prove me wrong.
Yeah, maybe someone can, but let them try.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be interesting. But there aren't any other sports where you can go, or activities where you can go to the park with nothing. You can literally stumble to a pickleball court, not even with the paddle, not even with your own equipment. You can sit on a bench and someone is going to say, hey, come try it. And let you borrow a paddle. And then take the 15 minutes they're going to take for you to learn how to bounce the ball over the net.
Right.
And then have that instant connection.
Right.
The older we get, the harder that is to do.
Well, so that's a good point, right? You're saying there's basically a very low barrier to entry and that the element of fun and play, you can cross generations, you can cross ages, and you dug into play a little bit. And I also want to talk about the fact this is also serious sports, right? Like, we can talk about play and pickup, but there's also like a very serious major league now. So I want to get into that. But before we get into that, this element of play you dug into a little bit, and I'm curious what you found.
Yeah, that was probably the most intriguing part of this exploration of what is it about pickleball. Once I decided there was some story here that I wanted to tell, I did a interviews with just my local community. I brought the camera one day and I said, hey, I'm going to bring the camera. If you all want to come in and tell me what is it about pickleball, please come. And a bunch of people came, like really a lot of people came and talked. And I was watching the footage later at home. And the one common theme that everybody mentioned was that it was fun. At the end of the interview or midway, or someone will always use the word fun. And so I did a little research about what fun is. And I came across this author, Catherine Price, who has a TED talk and a book about the power of fun. And in that book, she also talks about play, and she quotes a gentleman called Stuart Brown, who dedicated his life to understand or to prove the effect of play in the human brain. And so I interview Dr. Brown, and so he's part of the documentary. And one of the things that came out of that is that there is the pickleball stirs something in us that brings us back to the very basic feeling that we get as kids when we play. And it's actually an essential part of who we are as humans. Like, play actually has a purpose in life. Right. So it's not, one of these, it's not a thing that, you do as, that has no purpose, which is actually the definition. If you look at the definition of play, you'll find it's an activity that has no purpose, but it's actually exactly the contrary, which is it does have a purpose. So there's steers something inside that we tend to lose as we grow,
Right.
And I think that is to me right now what I think the major difference is. On pickleball, because you can play anything. You can play, again, basketball, tennis, but when you do it
on sport, right? You could play bridge, you can play mahjong, you can play cards, you can, there's games, right?
Absolutely.
But they're not physical.
Right. And you do it in a close proximity to someone that you might have just met or you haven't even met, which is the closest you get to childhood. You know, for those of us who are right. parents, we've seen our kids in the park just running off and starting playing with some stranger kid. And then they right. play, they have a great time, and then they don't need to exchange names or phone numbers, or they don't even okay. see them anymore. And they had the best time. And I think that's what pickleball does.
Yeah.
Because we're grownups, then we connect with those humans, and then we have the capacity yeah. to build, you know, relationships and to build a community around that, which it's a phenomenon.
Well, and I'm curious because I mean, it's obvious that COVID and the time of isolation exaggerated everyone's feeling, but I wonder, you know, had COVID not happened, was everyone still feeling kind of isolated anyway? I mean, maybe we were just sort of operating and so this was just an exaggerated moment. But I do think, like, for those people who are more uncomfortable meeting new people or don't really have a sense of social life, they don't want to go to bars, this gives them a place where they can drop in instantly. And in San Francisco, what I notice is, there's a lot of tech here. There's a lot of engineers. They tend to have a specific personality and maybe more discomfort socially, just like picking up. But maybe everyone has a little bit of this. It's not really that. And they go to the pickleball courts and they stay for hours and they feel so elated at the end. So I think you're right that it's that sense of community and connection. But then, you know, now it's starting to be big business, as we talked about. So someone you interviewed was the head of the MLP, who's a billionaire, Steve Kuhn. And so now we're not talking about just community. We're talking about business and we're talking about industry. So I'm curious if that's part of your documentary in terms of the other side of sport.
Yes, yes. And that was really interesting at the beginning of this exploration for the film, because it what drew me to tell the story was this social aspect of the community, something that I hadn't seen before. And then it crossed, you know, country barriers, right? I could see it internationally. It was like a human phenomenon. But then, you know, as I embarked in making a film, I started doing more research, and the more I would find out about pickleball, the more I will unpeel the onion, the layers of the onion, right. the more I will find, I'm like, what is this? what is this world of pickleball? And so one of the things that I learned about was, you know, about there was a whole professional, you know, aspect of it. And this was at a time where the MLP had just done their first tournament, the very mm-hmm. first tournament. And so I reached out to John Walters, who had written a piece on Sports Illustrated about the Wild Wild West of pickleball. I think that was the title or something along those lines. And so I reached out to him and I said, hey, I'm doing a documentary about pickleball. Would you talk to me? And he's just amazing. And he got on the phone with me and put me in contact with a lot of the people that he had talked to for the article. One of them was Steve Kuhn. So I went to visit Steve at Dreamland, which is his facility. And
I've heard it's amazing.
That in Texas dreamy. Is amazing. Yes, it's amazing. And so so I got to see firsthand, you know, for the first time, this professional world. And so what intrigued me about that, and yes, it is part of the documentary, is that I remember going up in the car to the parking lot of Dreamland, and there were these people walking up, you know, they were walking, we were driving very slow. And I looked over and I saw, I was like, oh, I think I recognize that from seeing her on YouTube. And it was Sarah Ashbury. It's like, oh, that woman looks also familiar, Lee. And so there were, Anna Lee was there. Like they were just like, you know, getting coffee on there was a food truck and they were just getting right. coffee. And so,
you mean the pros were just walking around.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, you know, it was a small facility. I mean, Dreamland is really large, but where the games are happening was, yeah. you know, rather small, and everybody was, you know, sort of there. So I got to approach many of them and say, hey, you know, I'm making a film, and I got, you know, a lot of them were like, yeah, sure, we'll talk to you.
Yeah.
And so, so that was really intriguing to me. Like, oh, this is the beginning of a sport.
Yeah.
There's actually a lot of, you rarely get to see that. Right. I mean, there are many sports. I think we talked about this, like padel, which started in Spain like 40 something years ago. And it hasn't really, you know, anchor in the States or in the rest of the world as much. But pickleball just seemed to have exploded internationally pretty quickly. And is the birth of what I think could very well become an Olympic sport, which is also, you know, obviously part of what, what they're trying to do from the International Federation. But one of the things that was also very intriguing talking to specifically Lee Whitwell and her story, which is part of the film, is that she became a pro at the age of 40 something, which
so Lee Whitwell is her name, and she's a current pro. Yeah. And she's over 45, I guess.
Yes. And she's playing, you know, was playing at the time in the major league pickleball, you know, like the highest professional, you know, league that there was and there is, right? And she got two MVPs and she's just great. And I thought that is also really interesting. That's another aspect to pickleball that you don't normally see in sports that require that level of physical, you know.
I think you're right. There's a birth of a new sport. Even though it's been around, it's maybe having its moment and hopefully it won't end. And I think about soccer because soccer never has had a moment where people weren't rabid fans and love it and wear Messi jerseys and, you know, Real Madrid and, you know, that's not gone away. So I don't think this is a shot in the arm, but it could be. It could just be a moment. And, you know, even for pros, there's 16-year-old pros and there's 50-year-old pros, probably will net out somewhere in between there, right? But it's so early. But did you worry that when you were starting to do this film that maybe this was just a fad and maybe it was just sort of a thing that was going? I mean, I'm curious because, you know, it could be. You mentioned padel and there's racquetball and there's been paddleball was, you know, around for years. There's so many racket sports, right? There's squash, there's badminton, but, you know, you've chosen again to dedicate your life to a lot of years and a lot of money to put this film together. And was there any fear that maybe it would, you know, the trend would be over before you finished your film?
Yes. Actually, I remember talking to John Walters about this one of the times we talked on the phone, and I said, you know, I were coming up with the title of the film, and I said, well, hopefully by the time I finish the film, I don't have to change the title to say the rise and fall of pickleball,
right?
So because it does seem like, you know, something that you know, could happen, and it obviously happens to your point and with many different things, but I don't, and I'm not saying this because I'm a pickleball lover and I am part of the community and I play. I think because I've had the chance to talk to so many different people from different ages, from different parts of the world, and I have seen what the positive impact that is having on people, I don't believe this is going away. You know, in the professional world, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. I know there's tons of controversy between, you know, the MLP and the PPA. I think in just the last few weeks, they're gone back and forth about whether they merge or not. And, you know, they finally merge, but who knows if that's going to change. And at some point, you know, we thought, should we dive into that for the film? Does it make sense? We're not interested. That's not, that is a small component of pickleball. Yeah. And it's a small component of the professional side of pickleball, but pickleball is bigger than that. It's way bigger than that. So we will cover the professional layer of pickleball because it is, again, it's a new sport. And as we explore, you know, all these different aspects of it, that is one of them. But I don't think pickleball is going to, I don't think pickleball is going to die. If nothing else, is going to continue to grow. And we are just seeing the beginning of it. We really are just seeing the beginning of it. I mean,
I agree with you completely, but I'm asking it more to just to hear your opinion, but you know, I think that all the components actually factor into its growth. Like you almost need all pieces, right? You need the potential for it to go to the Olympics. You need the potential for TV to cover it, to have celebrity athletes who can make money. Otherwise they don't have the time or the resources to spend playing. And then from the community aspect, which is far larger, right? Like if you think about the numbers of players that are recreational players, much, much bigger than what we're talking about. But I think it's inspiring for all types of players. And there's probably players that do play pickup that couldn't name a professional pickleball player if you held a gun to their head.
Maybe because it's there in their paddle, right? Maybe they can do like Anna Lee, I think, is the one that most people know. But you're absolutely right. You can walk into a court, and it's not guaranteed that people there are going to be able to say, no, you know, mention one.
So, yeah. So for your film, what's sort of next? Because you've been filming for almost a year now. You've been shooting?
Yes. Yeah. We started shooting about a year and a couple months ago.
Okay. And so what other stories do you still have to record, or where are you with the, you know, when's everyone going to be able to say, I saw it on HBO or whatever, Netflix.
Well, if it were up to me, it would be very soon. But, with documentary filmmaking, you want to tell the stories, you want the stories to tell you where to go. And so it's really hard to put an end date to when this will be completed. With that said, you want to have some, you know, timeline and the production, have some lead stories that you want to follow. And so that's what we've been doing so far. We knew we wanted to tell the different facets of pickleball. And so, and I think you could describe this as a magazine style kind of film where you have these different stories that we're following, and all together they're telling you the story of pickleball. This is not a narrated film.
Right.
I'm not part of the film. God forbid. I don't want to be, you know.
I know. For everyone that's listening, I had to beg her to be on camera. So I appreciate it.
Yes, even the voice is just, so we knew that there were certain stories that were important to tell, that story of pickleball that we want to tell. So we have interviewed several people who are able to tell, you know, that. But we have a few more. These are people that we've already talked to who have agreed to be part of the film, and we haven't scheduled the shooting because we're seeking funding. One of the stories.
Before you continue, so you're seeking funding via I want you to get back to the story that you're about to tell, but you launched a Kickstarter, which we will put in our show notes. And we will also encourage everybody to subscribe to this podcast so they can hear the details as your film goes on. But your Kickstarter is so that you can continue to tell these stories. So you can continue to have the funding to do that, which is really hard for documentaries.
Right. Yes. And thank you for putting that out there. We have, with some private, investors, been able to get this far. And now for the next few stories, we went the crowdsourcing route for a couple of reasons. One is because we wanted to spread the word. We're working on this project and give the people the opportunity to participate. And, you know, some people can participate by being in the film. Some people can participate by supporting the film and help us, get the word out. And being that pickleball is such a community-oriented, you know, activity, we thought we'll reach out to the community. And we've so far gotten really good response. We're not there yet. So we have another, 20 something days, to raise the remaining.
Right. Well, we will spread the word. So you were just about to say there's a few more stories you wanted to tell, and one of them in particular you were going to mention.
Yeah, there's a story, there's a couple of stories, but one of the stories that we think we have someone who again has agreed to share with us is how one of the things I found is when people play pickleball and they see what pickleball can do or the positive effect that pickleball can have, a lot of people want to spread that joy. My way of spreading the joy is by making a film. Hopefully people can see it. Again, right. if someone gets inspired and play and their life is changed in any way, then I would have completed my mission. Right. In the case of this particular person, he's dedicating his life to teach pickleball to kids who are maybe not in a great position to do other sports. And so that aspect of it is noble and is also a great representation of how two things, how pickleball inspires people to do that, but also how you can take pickleball, you can teach, you can give kids who maybe are not, that don't have access to the traditional sports for whatever reason that is, right. whether they're not athletic or in the way that they think they need to be to join those sports, or they don't have access. And you can give them an opportunity to learn something new really, really quickly. So that's another thing, that the ability, for 15, 20 minutes, you can just learn pickleball. So
yeah, that immediate feedback, I think for kids and adults, is probably one of the more unique pieces, that you will have fun very quickly. And I think that kind of a story is really important, I like what you're talking about, because it clearly is inspiring you to make a film, inspired me to start a podcast. It's inspiring people to start paddle companies and, bag manufacturing and, shoes and, you know, lessons. I have a friend who quit his very good tech job and decided to be a coach and teach lessons because his quality of life was better. So I think it is inspiring people to make changes and also want to get involved in some way. I just ran into someone this weekend who said, you know, I'm trying to think about what I want to do with respect to pickleball, maybe some drip, which is like slang for cool clothes. And, you know, I think that's great, right? Like whatever part of, you know, people's, I think a lot of the stories it sounds like you're telling are probably less around a new paddle company and more around maybe something more community focused. But I think, again, both are okay, right? Like it's okay that Steve Cohn, who is already a billionaire, wants to focus on, he's a businessman. Like it's no wonder that he wants to make this big business. I mean, he wants to, and he probably can, right?
And it probably opens up the, the path for all the things to happen, to your point. You know, I think if you look at the trajectory of every sport, you usually start learning that sport when you're a child, and then, you know, you stick to it, you get better. Maybe you're able to go to college in some sort of scholarship, and that, after that, maybe there is a professional path for you. And pickleball doesn't have that yet. I mean, there are other sports that don't, but pickleball doesn't. And there are people, I think, like Steve and others, you know, who have the capacity to do that, who are setting that foundation to some degree or another. There's also tons of people who are creating academies for kids. And so, you know, aside from, you know, whatever that ultimate professional path that you might have, it is those people who are down, create and donating their time, volunteering to get a net and a few paddles and teach kids, teach adults. Absolutely. Because, you know, it's going to help, you know,
stay active.
Help them active.
Yeah. I just interviewed someone, in one of the other episodes. He's 70 and he's lost 35 pounds. without making any changes. He just plays a lot of pickleball. And I think so from a weight loss standpoint and athletic. But I agree with you. I think It is an easy way to kind of level the playing field. I remember being in public school my whole life, and I was always aware of that discrepancy, right? I was a swimmer, and I knew that it's almost like it's a luxury in life to become a swimmer, because you need to have had lessons when you were little, access to a pool. It's a very time consuming sport, right? So there's things like that. You look at lacrosse, it was sort of a more elite upper echelon sport, and not really in the inner city, not really in rural areas. And so pickleball feels like, you know, it can really be played anywhere. I went to a pickleball camp and I met a group of about 12 women who had traveled, and they were all part of a church. And I said, well, how did you guys learn to play? We just put nets up in the church. That's how we all bonded. I mean, it's really amazing, right? Like, so yeah. What do you think about, like, what's kind of holding it back? What are some things you've uncovered that you feel like maybe during these stories that you think need to be, cause we're tooting its horn and it's all positive, and, but there's some problems, right? Like, you know, you talked about the noise, you talked about the controversy, but what else is out there that's holding the sport up in your mind?
I think the noise for sure. You know, I think there is, you know, you see this almost in every community that's wanting to expand. So I think that the number one, I think that could potentially, you know, stop the growth of it is the access to public courts, right?
Yes.
Because we have seen so many businesses opening up private clubs. And so whoever has the means is probably going to find a club that they can join with pickleball. Yeah. They're popping everywhere. What is more difficult is to get the parks and recreations to fund or to allow for either the conversion of some tennis courts to be hybrid tennis and pickleball, or just setting up new courts. Because at some point, and we're seeing this here in our community in Alameda, we have four public courts, and the community right now is in the middle of a hearing with the city of Alameda to try to get lines painted on a tennis court that's being, you know, revamped. And there's controversy. There are neighbors who are complaining about it, and they have every right to complain. And ultimately, you know, the city will, you know, come up with some resolution. But in the last year and a half here alone, we've seen the pickleball community like grow by some exponential number. So while you could go before and put your paddle and have, you know, a game within 5 minutes, now you have to wait like 20 because they're like, you know, 50.
Right. You might get one game an hour. Right. Yeah. And that might really deter people from going. I know it does here in San Francisco too. And then I think about cities like Cincinnati, who I think put in like 300 courts, and places in Florida so I agree. I think the municipalities and the city planners, like, get them out to the courts or do something so they realize that, first of all, it doesn't have to be a constant tennis versus pickleball. Like, it doesn't need to be that way. Like, pickleball doesn't take up very much space. I went down to a park in Southern California. There were four courts, one challenge and three others. And I looked at the footprint. It's so small. It's like barely a basketball court for all that to happen. And they're open from 7 a.m. till whenever they're lighted. They have nice wind protection. They have little screens in between. I mean, there's probably 300 or 400 people a day that rotate through and get plenty of time to play. So I think you're right. I think it's interesting that the cities haven't, like, what's taking them so long? What's the problem?
Yeah. I was thinking them so long. I think, maybe this documentary helps with that. Maybe doesn't, I think for the cities. So if all you hear about pickleball is that it's a bunch of annoying people who are addicts, it's like a cult because that's all they talk about. It's really easy to tune that out. Right. It's really too easy to be like, oh, these people again, I can't hear this anymore. But there's obviously more to that. And there is a passion, just like the passion I have, maybe the one that you have. There's something really good about it. And we want to share that. Yes. But sometimes when you're very passionate, again, it kind of puts people off. And maybe that's part of it.
You told me that your kids, they turned your kids off. Right. And they have a rule for you. What that you guys made up a rule in your house?
Yes, I'm only allowed to say the word pickleball 3 times a day.
or what happens?
Or they just go upstairs and they don't hang out with me. So then I don't have anybody to talk about pickleball with.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, luckily there's enough other pickleball players that probably do want to only talk about it. So then you just, but yeah, I agree. So you mentioned international. I love Spain. So listeners are going to have to hear about my love of Spain since I was in high school, and you're from Spain. But besides Spain and including Spain, are you really seeing this expansion? Because you do hear like, oh yeah, I hear a little bit in Australia, but what have you found internationally with respect to pickleball?
Yeah, actually, I just met someone this weekend who is from Finland, and she said, "Oh, pickleball is just starting there. Like, it's starting to grow. So it had been there for a while, but it's starting to grow." I'm from Spain, and I went to Spain to visit my families at the very beginning when I was working on this film, or when I was just thinking about working on it. Actually, that triggered me to really think that this was a story worth telling. And I did a little research, pickleball Spain, and it came up, you know, a couple of YouTube videos, and I could see the people playing and having, you know, just as much fun. And I ended up talking to someone in the Association of Pickleball in Spain. And he told me pretty much the same thing that I heard here. It was just becoming this huge thing. The community was crazy about it. People love it. I mean, all the same things, just in Spanish. And so and then that led me to talk to make the documentary, but also I ended up talking to Rifkin, who was behind getting the World Pickleball Association, which is like trying to get all these countries to sign up into this organization so then they can apply for pickleball to be in the Olympic Games. And I was so surprised that there were so many different countries that I can't remember on top of my head right now how many there are. Yeah. There are definitely over 50 right now. I can tell you that in Europe is growing. It's growing exponentially. Spain, the UK, France, and then I know it's becoming really big in India. I know the president of the IFP, which is another international organization, is from India. So that sport is also getting very big there.
It's true. I talked to a paddle company, ProLite, and I'm actually going to have an episode with them soon. So watch out for that. Again, subscribe if you want to hear about it. And he talked about the expansion in India, a lot of players in India, and there's a lot of people in India. So it doesn't surprise me. And like you said, for any of these countries, whether they're, you know, on any socioeconomic scale, that kind of access is real easy. It makes it a lot easier, which is why soccer, I think, is often popular in so many countries of different socioeconomic levels, because besides the ball, you can play pretty, you know, that's all you need, right? That's all you need is to play. And I think
that's all you need. I think the difference with soccer, though, is in relationship to pickleball, is traditionally soccer has been a male sport in all of these countries. So even though, you know, I'm proud to say Spain, the women Spanish team just won the World Cup. women's soccer is only a few years old and is a professional sport. You don't see people going over 30 something playing soccer. I mean, had a very short life, right?
I do think that the fact that it can be a lifetime sport, pickleball, is what's really fantastic about it, and that there are ways to figure out who to play with, right? There are some, you know, the community can kind of steer you in the right direction around who you might want to play with at your ability, but there's always someone at your ability. And even when you travel, you can find pickup games. And so I think that the more international travel that goes on, people are going to start to pick their trips based on where they can go, which hotels have pickleball courts and, you know, where there's open play, right?
And you can be competitive. I mean, that is also very unique, right? Like I started playing, I was sure I was an athlete, even though when you see me from the outside, I don't look like one, but I still have that. I'm athletic. And I would have never imagined that at age 40 something, I could pick up a brand new sport or any sport, new or not new. And I actually could become very competitive and compete, you know, at a high level anywhere in the world, right? Not just here in my local community, you know,
Right.
And so that it's also, I think, this is what you see, you know, you see the recreational, you know, players, you see the amateur players, and you see the pro players, right? So there's these three different categories. But I think for those who just want to play and have fun, like I said, it doesn't matter. Anyone can do it, and you can just have fun for the rest of your life playing pickleball. But if you are an amateur, if you want to take it a little bit more seriously, there isn't a cutoff time. I mean, at some point, maybe if you're like, I don't know, over 80, you cannot compete anymore. But even that, I mean, the senior games, you know, cover a pretty wide range. And sure, maybe there's golf, and then there's a few sports, maybe you can do that. But at some point, it's gonna have a limit. And pickleball seems to have, I mean, it will have a limit, but...
No, I agree with you. Yeah. And I think it is nice, the cross-generational. I think I've seen it a lot coming up in schools, and I've done some interviews with college organizations. And I think it's just kind of days away from becoming a an official collegiate sport versus a club. So, I'm really excited about your documentary. Obviously, I want to see it once it's done, and I'm passionate about it. And it is the kind of thing, if I was searching, I'd be like, oh my God, there's a documentary that can reinforce all the things that I think about pickleball. I can't wait to spread the word.
It's not just me.
Exactly. But you use the word addicting, and addictive, and people do use that word. It has such a negative connotation, but I think what I like to think about it is that if there was anything that I would be encouraged to do on a regular basis, I'm glad it's something healthy and active, and provides connection, because, you know, you could be addicted to running, or you could be addicted to, you know, cycling, but that's, you know, sort of individual. And so I like this sense of meeting people from all different backgrounds. You touch paddles, and like you said, you go on. But I don't know if it just sounds really negative when we use the word addicting.
that's a really good point. And I've had conversations with people about this, and it's true. And there's a specific definition about, you know, addiction. But I would say, like for me, and I didn't talk to you about this before because it's hard to talk about, especially at the beginning. I don't want to set my tone and go in this direction. But for me, the reason why it really drew me to play once, you know, it was obviously the community aspect of it. But one of the main things is that I could go every day to court and forget about what was happening in my life. And I was going through some rough time because my sister was dying, and it really gave me this opportunity to be in a zone and just playing for like 2 or 3 hours. And I was just having fun when there's just no other way I would have, you know, my mind just would not allow me to. And so I heard that story from many different people as well. And so is it addiction when you go meditate? Is it addiction when, you know, when you find a place? I don't know. I wouldn't be able to tell you that, but I think there is something about finding this very unusual combination of being in a zone, like being able to have fun in a way that you don't even think about, and also take you out at the same time of you know, about
all the stress of life.
All the stress.
I think that's a really good point. I think it's such a good point, Matthew, because I think I've thought about that too when I played early on. You know, for a lot of people, it was during COVID. And so the stresses of whatever that was, worried about your kids, worried about your job, worried about finances, anything that was going on, which was for most people something, or maybe more serious, like you with a family member. But I think you're absolutely right. And that, first of all, if you take your eye off the ball, you're not going to play very well, right? So you really have to focus. But it's true. It's like you're having such a good time that the hours pass And you reflect back and you think, wow, I just spent some time not worrying about all the stresses in real life and pain that you might be going through. And so it's a sense of relief. And for some people, like you mentioned earlier, that could just be loneliness or isolation. But for others, it could be far more serious than that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah. And yes.
Well, so, okay. So we, thank you. I just thank you for telling me and opening up about that. It's really meaningful and I definitely understand and identify with it. When are we going to, how can people support you right now? We talked about this a little bit earlier in the episode, but you have a Kickstarter going on and it ends in 20 days from today, which will probably be closer to 10 days by the time this episode's out, but we will put this out in the show notes. And what should we expect next? Beyond that?
Yeah. So we hope that we reach the goal of the campaign, which should allow us to film the remaining, you know, part of the film. And then we go into editing, which, you know, carries a whole other set of cost. Post-production sometimes is more costly than production itself. But what these will allow us to do is to put together a work in progress, you know, a piece that will actually show the narrative of the film. And with that, we hope to either pitch it to streaming services or try to find, you know, a funder, right, to help us with the final part of it. We'd love to finish the film by the end of the summer so we can submit it to film festivals starting September.
Great. Everyone's going to be holding their breath now because they're going to want to see it. Yeah. But I really do appreciate you spreading the word, kind of the really making, again, like what you said earlier about how important it is to tell this story, because maybe it would inspire someone out there in some way, shape, or form. And I do think that there is sort of, it's not a social justice issue, but in a way it is. Like you're combating loneliness and isolation and inactivity and loss of connection. And also, you know, encouraging these cities, municipalities, countries to get their acting gear and meet the needs of the community, because it's our land. It's not like this. It's not like Rec and Parks land. It's this people's land, right? It's for everyone. So it should be. It's funny, actually. This just reminds me. To slide aside, we have, you know, I live in San Francisco. We have Golden Gate Park, which is very similar to some major parks like Central Park. And there's huge amounts of land and there are these buffalo that roam around. And we were laughing the other day, like, look how much land we gave to the buffalo, who probably don't even want to be here. They'd prefer to be anywhere else in the middle of a city. And you could build like 400 pickleball courts. So nothing against the buffalo, but.
Nothing against the buffalo or the tennis players. I think there's an opportunity and we're seeing a lot of compromise in different places. I think, you know, San Francisco's dealt with this, right? To find some compromise when they rebuild the tennis courts, they were able to set up, you know, some pickleball courts. So I think, you know, compromise is possible. It's not about taking someone, you know, the tennis courts away. It's about saying, you know, this is another activity that people want to do. And these are, you know, obviously taxpayers as well. And if it's a facility that really is not suited for a court because it's, you know, it's noisy and it's bothering people or because it's taken away from other things, that should be considered for sure. But there's also these, you know, pickleball players just need to stop shouting.
Yeah, pickleballers need to play. Players need to play. Well, thank you again. Thanks everyone for listening and making sure that you subscribe to the podcast or on Apple or Spotify or YouTube or anywhere you listen. And we will be following your film, Machu, and we wish you all the luck in the rest of the filming and raising the funds you need and on the courts, of course. So yes. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Crystal. I really appreciate it. And I can look forward to hearing the podcast.
Wonderful.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to Simply Pickleball. We will be back very soon with great interviews, discussions, and more all about pickleball. Don't forget to subscribe to our channels on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, or any of your favorite podcasting outlets. Until next time, happy dinking.